This all started with a dream. A dream. I don't remember the particulars, but I knew what it was when I woke. I was angry. Here I am in my 78th year, and these feelings of anger still haunt me. I thought I was past it. I told myself it was their loss. I was angry not because of what he did to me, but what he did to my father. He chose not to know and love a good man and his family. I'm speaking, of course, of how my father, David Benkovsky, the firstborn son of Orthodox Jewish parents, was disowned by his father because he loved and married my mother, Margaret Musco, an Italian Roman Catholic. For this act of love, my father was dead to his family. They sat Shiva for him. Over the next several generations, my father's expulsion was used as an example for anyone contemplating marrying outside the faith. There's a very large family on my father's side. He had four siblings, and they had lots of children, and those children had lots of children. I knew only my father's younger brother, his wife, and their son, Bill. I've met only one other cousin, Evie, who lives in Jerusalem. When the summer series was announced, I knew right away who I wanted as my dinner guest. I wanted to sit with my father and ask him questions about his journey, his beliefs, and what he was trying to teach my brother and me. My father died in December of 2008, and we never got into the weeds about how he felt and how it affected his role as a father and as a teacher. There were a few conversations, but mostly anecdotes and no real follow-through, partly because my mother, who I know was angry, had a really good way of shutting conversations down. I also have not discounted that I was too self-absorbed to ask many questions. I also want to tell my father how the lessons he did teach and the example he set as a father and as a human being led me to Unitarian Universalism. I was raised Catholic. It's something my father agreed to, but I think reluctantly. I was baptized, received communion, went to catechism, and was confirmed. I received the sacrament not out of love for the Catholic Church, because, well, that's what I was told to do. I did detect a little friction in the house. I remember one incident where I had catechism and a Little League baseball game or a practice. I went to catechism. My father was not happy. There were no words that I remember, just a look, maybe a sound, but I knew he was not happy. Almost immediately after my confirmation, my mother and I stopped going to church. It was never spoken of again, and I would love to speak to him about that decision. For 12-year-old me, that was great. Even with all those years of catechism, I felt no connection to the church. On the other hand, my father did not try to instill his Jewish faith in either my brother or me. Or so I thought. If I had a chance to discuss that with him, he might have told me that he felt betrayed by his religion. Why would he want his son to learn about a faith that would disown their own child for violating its tenets? By my early teen years, I was not particularly enamored of any organized religion. I did not believe in much of what the Catholic taught, that Jesus was the Son of God or that he died for my sins. I could not grasp the idea of original sin. What did I do? As I grew older, I disagreed with the church's positions on abortion, the role of women in family life and in the church. I was appalled by the vast wealth of that the church had accumulated. Instinctively, I was turned off by creedal faiths. By my early teens, I had no faith tradition. At the time, it did not seem important, but later I knew it created a void that needed filling. I would not belong to a church until I became a UU in my 30s. While my father did not teach Jewish faith or even observe Jewish rituals or traditions, he taught one important lesson which became the foundation of my becoming a UU. It was two simple words. Be nice. Be nice. Be nice. Are you being nice? I can't tell you the number of times he said it. Not just a stern warning to the older brother beating up his younger brother, you know, be nice to your brother or else. No, but an ordinary conversation. I remember one funny time. I was home after my freshman year of college and was dating a young woman from the next town. One day he asked me, "Are you being nice?" I had to suppress a laugh because, well, we were close. I told him with a little smirk, "Yes, Dad, I'm being nice." I've thought a lot about those two words over the years. There's a lot of meaning in them. Ultimately, it shaped my faith tradition. What is the phrase, be nice, but a restatement of the golden rule? Treat others as you wish to be treated. There's a famous story about Hillel, an influential Jewish sage. A heathen comes to him and says that he will be converted if Hillel can teach him the entire Torah as he stands on one foot. Hillel says, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow. That is the whole Torah, and the rest is commentary." I've come to realize that in his own way, my father did impart perhaps the most fundamental teaching of his faith. Unknowingly, I was set on a path that ultimately led me to become a UU. It was quite accidental. Our home in Auburn, New York, was two short blocks west of my children's elementary school. Right across the street was a Baptist church, which offered non-denominational Bible study for children. And my wife and I thought, what a good way for them to get a little education about the Bible. My son completed the program without incident. However, my daughter came home one day in tears. Her teacher told her that because she had not been baptized, if she died, she was going to hell. That's quite a thing to tell an 8-year-old. That was the last day of Bible study for her. We still hoped to find a place where our kids could be exposed to religious ideas. I was an attorney, and legal research was a daily part of my practice. You'd think I would use those skills to find the appropriate church, but no. Instead, we went to the nearest church. Three blocks south of our house was the Unitarian Universalist Society of Auburn. We all dressed in our Sunday best and knocked on the front door. I was astonished. Just about everyone who greeted us was, well, old. Sort of like I am now. We were warmly welcomed and sat for the service. I don't remember what the minister preached, but it struck home only in a way that a UU sermon can. As a bonus, the RE program was held in the lower level of the church. During the week, it was a Montessori school. The owner of the school was also a church member. It could not have been more ideal. We found a home, and not long after, other young families started attending. We joined the church and became active. Excuse me. The golden rule is not singular to the Jewish faith. Confucius said, "What you do not wish for yourself, do not do to others." Jesus framed it in positive terms. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The golden rule is contained within the ethical systems of most religions, including Buddhism, Christianity, Confucianism, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, and Taoism. The golden rule has evolved from a proscriptive statement, what is hurtful to you, do not do to others in ancient Jewish traditions. And similarly, as Confucius said, what you do not wish for yourself, do not do to others. This has evolved into a prescriptive message, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, as found in the books of Matthew and Luke. Instead of refraining from harming others, it encourages positive action towards others. As you use, we practice another version of the golden rule called the platinum rule. Treat others as they would like to be treated. Sounds very you, no? The platinum rule for us extends not just to how we interact with each other, but how we interact with our community, how we create relationships based upon trust and respect, and how we repair harm when it occurs. The golden rule and the platinum rule are inherent parts of the UU tradition. We are a covenantal faith. We do not adhere to any dogma. The rules, gold or platinum, are not divine imperatives, but ethical guides. It is, for us, an expression of empathy, mutual respect, and human connectedness. It aligns with our principles and values, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice and compassion in human relations, and respect for the interdependent web of existence. I would argue that there is a further evolution. The golden rule in its Christian form commands me to do as to others as I would like done to me. It focuses on what I want. I suspect what others want and what I want do not align all the time. Likewise, the platinum rule asks that I treat others as they would like to be treated. It asks me to discern how someone wants to be treated. How am I really going to know that? Yes, I can think in generalities, be kind, be nice. Beyond that, it's a dangerous leap to know how someone wants to be treated, especially in crisis. Not long ago, Reverend Alice spoke about holding space for another. She sent to this summer's speakers a short essay by Heather Platt entitled, What It Means to Hold Space for People, plus 8 tips on how to do it well. Platt says holding space for others means that we are willing to walk alongside another person and whatever journey they're on without judging them, making them feel inadequate, trying to fix them, or trying to impact the outcome, and let go of judgment and control. Another writer commented that when we hold space for another, we're not holding anything. Holding space is about being in the space. The golden and platinum rules require that we think about ourselves first. Holding space requires that we listen to others, that we strive not to insert our own feelings, opinions, or advice. For me, this is an evolution in my faith. Before I knew it by another name, I learned a lesson on holding space a long time ago. One day my wife Patty came home. I think she may have been from one of her flying trips. And she was really upset about something. She was going on and on about how upset and angry she was. And when she finished, being the good lawyer that I was and being the not so smart husband, I offered all kinds of advice and fixes. And as I was going on, she stopped me and said, all I want is a hug. That's holding space. Another idea has occurred to me. Are we not distilling the whole of this faith into just a few words? Just as Hillel famously distilled the Torah to 9 words, what is hurtful to you, don't do to others, holding space distills it to 2 words. I'd like to suggest that we can distill it, the whole of our faith, to 1 word, empathy. Do we not, as Unitarian Universalists, strive to see the world through the eyes of others? Each of the shared values of Unitarian Universalism, love, interdependence, pluralism, justice, transformation, generosity, and equity require that. What a gift that is. I had an epiphany. It struck me that I too need to see the world through the eyes of one other person, the eyes of my grandfather, to see through his eyes, his disappointments, to understand his pain, to see the dreams of his that were dashed. And maybe my dreams will be a little kinder and gentler. What a gift it is to see the world through the eyes of others, if even for only a moment. May it be so.